I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years with a commitment to provide objective financial advice.
Since new film, The Darjeeling Limited, is about three estranged brothers who meet on a train in India to reconnect, to search for a spiritual experience and deal with the baggage literally from their childhoods. It stars Owen Wilson as the bossy older brother Francis, Adrian Brody as the middle brother Peter with a troubled marriage, and Jason Schwartzman as the youngest, Jack, who writes short stories and lusts after the train stewardess. Here's a scene from the film where Francis tells his siblings about his plan.
How did it get to this? Why haven't we spoken in a year?
Let's make an agreement.
And okay. What? A, I want us to become brothers again like we used to be, and for us to find ourselves and bond with each other. Can we agree to that?
Okay. Yeah.
B, I want us to make this trip a spiritual journey where each of us seek the unknown and we learn about it. Can we agree to that?
Sure. I guess so.
C, I want us to be completely open and say yes to everything, even if it's shocking and painful. Can we agree to that?
I had Brendan make us an itinerary.
Who's Brendan?
My new assistant. He's going to place an updated schedule under our doors every morning of all the spiritual places and temples that we need to see and expedite hotels and transportation and everything.
How's he going to do that?
I had him bring a printer and a laminating machine.
Where is he?
Well, it actually doesn't matter. He's in a different compartment on another part of the train. But we never see him. Ever.
The film features Anderson's trademark humor and pathos, off-kilter banter, surreal playfulness, and colorful design. Wes Anderson joins us this morning on Radio Times to talk about his new movie, which he co-wrote with Schwartzman and Roman Coppola. His other films include Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, The Royal Tannenbaums, Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Wes Anderson, a great pleasure to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us, Jason Schwartzman, who made his film debut in Rushmore, and his other films include Heart Huckabees, Shop Girl, Bewitched, Slackers, and Marie Antoinette. And Jason Schwartzman, nice to have you with us as well.
You?
That hesitation was that as we were listening to that scene, Jason was doing the lines here as we were listening on the radio. Let me talk to you both about the writing of this, which you wrote together with Francis Ford. Actually, I should say Roman Coppola wrote a lot of it in Paris.
Yes, we wrote in. Well, you know, we live in different cities. Jason and Roman and I, we've been friends for many years, and we wrote sort of all over the world. Probably the biggest portion of it we wrote in India. We went together to India and took a train journey through Rajasthan and sort of acted out the movie, the three of us, and ended up finishing the script in Shimla, a city in the Himalayas.
And you like writing with people, is that right, Wes Anderson?
I like writing. I like working with collaborators. I like working with my friends, especially.
And you've worked with a lot of your friends, and I do want to talk about that. What was it like for you to, I guess, begin with the writing of this, Jason Schwartzman, and then, of course, you're in the film as well?
Yeah, well, this is the first screenplay that I've ever been a part of, and, well, what a way to begin to work with Roman and Wes. Just a great learning experience for me, and a real privilege to have been able to collaborate with these people who not only are my best friends and family, but
Roman is Jason's cousin.
Yes, I know.
But,
I know.
But also two people whose work I admire very greatly and very deeply. So it was for me a real luxury to be able to work with them, and then to act out the very script that we had written was a double privilege.
And the idea of working with friends is you can just work so what easily. There's a kind of shorthand, I guess, you can use when you've known people for such a long time.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of things. I think one is that I wanted to make a movie in India. I wanted to make a movie on a train about brothers. But I think my main idea was I wanted to write with Roman and Jason, and that I'd like to make a movie that would be the combination of our points of view and see what that produced, and make a very personal story. Almost everything in the film comes from one of our personal experiences. And then I also think when you work with friends, there's some kind of energy that comes from the fact that, you know, the project begins with a reunion, and somehow I like to think that that finds its way on screen.
Well, and I would think there could be the danger, though, working with friends, especially if you're the director, who I assume has to be the boss in certain kinds of ways.
Yeah.
Was that a yes?
Yeah, I think, but you know, I if I'm the boss, it's in a with a gentle.
It's a benign. Yeah. Yes, I'm looking at you, Jason.
And it's loving.
It's loving. Tell us about your character, Jack, who never wears a pair of shoes in this whole movie.
Nope,
I should say.
Nope, I don't wear.
Never
any
explained
shoes.
Either.
I don't wear any shoes. But my character Jack is the youngest of the three brothers. He's a writer, and you know, I think that he's. He's someone that I think Roman West and I could identify with, because in the script, my character, a theme and of his character is that he's constantly writing these short stories about things that he's experienced. And he needs to write these short stories, like little chapters of his life, and he completes them and then he kind of moves on. And I think that that was something that we tried to do as writers, was, like, as Wes said earlier, to write something personal.
Right.
We took things from our lives, and we needed it. We needed to write this movie. And so, much like Jack, we composed a piece of fiction based on every nonfiction.
And does that mean that you have brothers? You are a brother?
Yeah, I come from
a big family.
You've
gone on spiritual journeys. You felt estranged from at time to time.
Keep going. All of the above.
Same for you, Wes Anderson.
Yes, I'm the middle of three brothers. And actually, when I showed the movie to my brothers, their first reaction is, "We need to do this. We need to go on
really?
A journey like this together." You know, that's
my brother too. Yeah,
and same reaction as well, which is we gotta do something together as brothers.
We need to bond, which is not a word we normally use in that way.
Well, I love that it's a spiritual journey with a laminated itinerary. I mean, that seems like such a delightful oxymoron.
Yes, it doesn't sound like something that's very likely to work.
Right. Laminated adventure.
A laminated adventure, exactly. Now, this is filmed in India, and Wes, you and I were talking before the show just how utterly gorgeous it is, just in terms of color, the golds, the blues, the greens, the reds, this palette of color. And I asked you whether you did something with the film to make it look that way, and you said no. That's the way India looks.
Yeah. Well, you know, we didn't go to India to build our own version of it. We went there just to see what we could discover and what we could learn. And I think more or less everything you see in the movie is something that we came across while we were writing or while we were traveling, and said, let's include that. So it's all really just things. It's just the things that are there. The movie looks the way India looks.
And is it scripted, or is there a certain degree of improv, because it has a kind of loose feel to it?
Well, it's scripted, but we did have a sort of idea that I think some people were nervous about us going to India and taking on what ends up being a rather large production, because we had a train that we were traveling with the whole crew, but we had this thought that whatever happens, you know, if we ask someone, you know, Jason always refers to that, you know, if we ask for a blue truck and we get a red car, we're going to shoot the red car, and that was an exciting way to work, and it really did change the movie. And I think in some ways it helped us to, rather than have India be the backdrop, it became sort of the subject matter.
Mm-hmm. You carry a lot of luggage in this film, you and your two brothers, Jason. What literally were in those suitcases that you were carrying around?
Well, we were lucky enough to have Sandy Hamilton with us, a property master extraordinaire, and he and Wes both were great, because they encouraged us to fill the bags with the belongings of the character. So had you that bag been split open somehow in a scene, you would have found my character's clothes, the books he would have been reading, his journals. It's really great to know that you're really lugging around something that feels real and is real.
But heavy.
But I was just going to say it. It does. It it gets heavy.
And there's a lot of baggage. It's very attractive to design. Yes, what?
Oh, well, for yes, because we knew these suitcases sort of represent one of the characters in the film who we don't ever actually meet. And the brothers have these suitcases with them practically every second of the film. So I knew they were going to be in almost every shot. And so we designed a suitcase. We sort of invented a look for them. My brother drew made these illustrations. And then we got the guys at Vuitton, because we were in France. We got them to produce this set of what are meant to be old suitcases for us, and they end up being they're part of the design of the movie in the end.
And literal baggage. I mean, this is the baggage that these brothers are carrying around. I mean, is that being a little too concrete here?
Well, it's hard to avoid it. I wish that wasn't the metaphor that is in the common parlance.
Yes,
because it ends up we get a little heavy handed that way. Because first we had the suitcases, and as we went along, the suitcases came to represent the baggage. And I was like, well, I wish they didn't use it.
And now you have to explain yourself.
Yes,
right?
So now we just try to, we always try to just refer to them as suitcases or luggage.
As opposed to baggage. Yeah. I get it. Tell us, though, Wes, about the trains, and you had them refitted. I mean, trains, of course, are so evocative in so many ways, but they're also, I would assume, a difficult place to film a movie.
Well, you know, it's not, it depends on who you talk to on the crew. Some people will say it's a complete nightmare. If you, for instance, need to get we're working in a little compartment where we're shooting, but if you need to get from one side of that to the other, because that's where you're keeping your equipment, right, and we're filming, you can't go around the set. It fills it up, but for us it made because we were on a real train and we're going out into the desert every day. It's an adventure, and you never really know quite what's going to happen. You never know when we're going to get stopped, or even where we're going to end up, because we're kind of low on the totem pole. And if they have a tendency to suddenly tell you there's an unscheduled train coming, and we need to go somewhere else to get out of its way.
You like the spontaneity of that?
I loved that, and also what we ended up with was a very intimate working environment, for the actors.
And we're almost up on a break here, Jason, but what was it like to work so closely within a train compartment?
Well, like Wes said, I think for us it really was, it became what I referred to as a good claustrophobia, because, this is not a bad thing, but the tendency on most films that are shot on sets that aren't moving is that, you've got the set, and then there are places for people to go when work is being done between shots. So when they're putting up lights, actors go to a trailer, or they go to a craft service table, or they go wherever they go. And that's fine. That's where most movies are made. But it doesn't contribute to intimacy. Now, I'll say that being on a moving train where you can't get off, there's no trailers, you're stuck together in a tiny compartment. So the actors really were encouraged to be together all the time. I got to go. I'll be right back.
Wes Anderson directing Radio Times this morning. We are going to take a very short break and get back to our guests, director Wes Anderson, actor Jason Schwartzman, and they've got a new film. It's called The Darjeeling Limited. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Focus Features, presenting the new espionage film Lust, Caution, from Ang Lee, the Academy Award-winning director of Brokeback Mountain. Lust, Caution, now in select theaters.
Widener University supports WHYY. Widener has graduate programs in education, social work, business, engineering, and more. Widener is hosting a graduate open house on Thursday, October 18th on the main campus in Chester. To register, 1-888-WIDENER or widener.edu. Other programs available in nursing, physical therapy, hospitality management, and more. 1-888-WIDENER or online at widener.edu.
Have you ever wanted to question the guests on Radio Times in person instead of on the phone? Well, here's your chance. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, inviting you to join us for a Radio Times special taped at Princeton University on Wednesday, October 24th at 6 p.m. This event is free for all WHYY members. Reserve your seat by calling 215-351-0511 or visit whyy.org. See you in Princeton on October 24th.
Supporting WHYY, Germantown Friends School, authentic Quaker education for boys and girls K-12. Hosting an open house this Saturday from 2 to 4 p.m. For details or to RSVP, www.germantownfriends.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The Darjeeling Limited is Wes Anderson's new film. It's about three brothers who meet in India to try to reconnect a year after the death of their father. A lot of the story takes place on a train, which was refitted for the film. The film is co-written with actor Jason Schwartzman, both of whom join us today on Radio Times. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. I want to put a question to you, Wes, only because I was reading about what it was like on the set at filming The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. I think $60 million production. Lots of sets and handlers and trailers and all that. Did you want to get away from that experience with this film?
Well, yeah. I mean, I loved making that movie, but I had been warned before we started that you don't do a movie on the water. It's just not done.
It's just too complicated, right?
It's
too many variables.
Too complicated, yes, and people have bad experiences. I thought, well, except that we're going to have learned from all those productions who had troubles, and we're going to avoid all those problems, and we didn't. It took us 100 days to shoot the movie, and we planned to shoot for 70, and we spent more money than we had planned to spend, quite a bit more money, and it was very, very difficult, and sometimes exhilarating, but sometimes frustrating, and we had a giant crew when we moved slowly,
right?
And with this movie, we wanted to make it for a modest budget. We wanted to move very quickly and just feel free, and it was exciting. I will say it was more fun.
It was more fun. Yeah. And because of what Jason just said about the fact that everyone was there together, making the film together.
Yes, and you know, very kind of movie type detail of how the production was set up, for instance, is that on The Life Aquatic, everybody had trailers and a makeup person that is looking after them. And on this movie, there were no trailers, and we all lived in a house together, and everyone did their own makeup, and they got themselves dressed and ready in the morning, and they had a microphone built into their costumes, and they came to the set, got on the train, and we set to work.
Huh.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Roman, the other writer, was instrumental in figuring out this approach because, you know, we've all made lots of movies. Roman had a particular sense of how to figure out those problems and force it to work.
Did that help as an actor to sort of wake up, put on the clothes that you were going to wear for the part and live in them all day long?
Oh, definitely. I think that, you know, that suit that I wear in the film, I was delivered to me on a Sunday night, and except for a change, you know, a clean change halfway through the week, it was my clothing, and I found that I'd wear it when I'd come home every night and have dinner in it, and I lived in it, and I must say, working so efficiently is great for the energy, actually, because it keeps everything just alive. There's not a lot of downtime, and there were other sets on the train, so while shooting on one set, another shot is being set up, so you can shoot a scene, finish it, walk on right immediately down to the next train compartment, mm-hmm. and do another scene. It's a wonderful way to work. It's very fast.
You did something for the web, Hotel Chevalier, as a bit of a setup for the Darjeeling Limited.
Yes,
and Jason's in it.
Right, right.
And that's Natalie Portman.
Right. We made that. We didn't make it with the idea that it would go on the internet. We made it just on its own. First we had written the beginning of the movie. Then I wrote this short film with Jason and Natalie Portman, and then, as we wrote the rest of the script for the feature, we sort of began to connect the two together, and in the end, they're sort of companion pieces. But then we decided we'd wanted the short to be available for free, and we put it on iTunes, and you can just download it. And I think, you know, but a lot of people seem to prefer to watch it with the movie, so maybe at a certain point we might add it in with the prints of the movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
Different people will see it in different ways.
And Jason, you're in a hotel room in Paris, and, mm-hmm. and Natalie Portman, who plays, I guess she's your girlfriend or some form
of... She's haunting me.
She's haunting you, exactly. And she has some unexplained bruises.
Mm-hmm.
How did you understand that as the character in that story?
Well, the character in the story is discovering these bruises for the first time, and I think he's going to decide to process that later, that information later. And they'll
And we're still processing that.
But it's you know, the film is, it's, you know, the short is a kind of a prologue, really, and so it's where my character is coming from before the film. It happens just before it, I suppose.
And not to give too much away, is that the character you're calling when you're checking her
yes,
voicemail? That was the character.
Yeah.
Did you want to add to that, Wes?
Oh, well, I was just going to say that about the bruises thing, that we're not being coy. I think we are really. I think we share the point of view of the character Jack. We have ideas of what those bruises may mean, but we don't actually know.
Mm-mm. Let me ask you one more thing, because
we don't want to know.
Well, that's interesting.
We're better off.
You're better off not knowing, just having it kind of haunt your imagination,
yeah,
so to speak.
I think so.
You do cast Owen Wilson in this new movie. He's swathed in bandages. He's had some kind of a strange accident. And I have to say, knowing what he's been through in his real life, that he apparently attempted suicide or has been on a suicide watch, it's a very poignant and almost painful performance to watch, because of trying to reconcile this character with what appears like his real life as it is today.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I think any time somebody goes to a movie, they bring all their own point of view and their own experiences that figures in as much as the movie that they're seeing. You know, I think people don't really know, you know, Owen hasn't spoken publicly about this stuff, and when he does, people will know much more. Right now, it's all, you know, people just have their ideas about it, but, you know, he's doing very well.
Well, I was going to ask you, because both of you were friends of his, and he's okay.
He's good. He's very good. You know, and he said he'll talk about it and express himself about it.
Well, let me just quickly reintroduce you. And I do want to play some clips from some of the other films that you both have been involved in. And our guests are Wes Anderson and Jason Schwartzman. They co-wrote, along with Roman Coppola, a new film. It's called The Darjeeling Limited. Wes Anderson's other films include Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, The Royal Tenenbaums, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Jason Schwartzman made his film debut in Rushmore, and his other films include I Heart Huckabees, Shop Girl, Bewitched, Slackers, and Marie Antoinette. You gained something like 50 pounds for Marie Antoinette? You played Louis?
Yeah, I play Louis. And Louis says I put on about 50 pounds, yeah.
Wow. And just eating to your heart's content, or?
Yeah, there's no real mystery. You just start eating. You eat more than you're used to eating, like five times as much as I was used to eating, at least, and just constantly putting food in my mouth.
Was that hard?
Yeah.
To eat so much?
Yeah, I think that it was hard. It was, the first 10 pounds were a breeze. You know, that's the holidays.
Right.
You put that on during the holidays. But after that, it becomes unnatural to really, you know what it is? It becomes unnatural to gain that much weight so quickly.
And were you putting on the weight in a vegetarian?
Are you a vegetarian?
Yeah, vegetarian. Oh. I gained it all. Yeah, and or
with brown rice and
well, the funny
mung
thing,
beans.
I ate a lot of almond butter and cookies and, you know, like fruit juice sweetened cookies and stuff like that. But I ate a ton of food, one thing I discovered was eating late at night was helpful to gaining weight. So I would keep a plate of cookies or donuts next to my bed, and I have an alarm that would go off in the middle of the night, like at 3 a.m, and I'd wake up and I'd eat them, and then I just go back to bed.
And would that be a happy moment in the night?
No, it was a very lonely, depressing moment.
To be grabbing for
wake
a donut
with,
at 3
wake
in the
up
morning.
With some powdered sugar on the side of your
face. Well, I heard De Niro, Raging Bull, it was pasta and beer.
Yeah.
Were you ever drawn to those?
Yeah. I actually would drink a six-pack of beer a night.
Wow. Now, clearly you've lost it. Was it hard to lose?
Yeah, it was hard to lose it. Because you are so used to eating so much food. Like, a normal night out for me would be two pizzas and some pasta and a calzone or whatever. So you have to learn to just scale back and have a slice, you know.
Well, let me dial back the clock a bit and talk about Bottle Rocket. Okay. No, actually, let me talk about Rushmore, only because I want to put in a number of films here. How autobiographical was that? I know you filmed it at your grade school.
Yes, I we shot it in Houston it was my high school. I think it's very much invented, that movie, but it's sort of an enhanced version of my kind of childhood and teenage years mixed with Owen's. So it's kind of got both of us, and then really it becomes something that the two of us just made up together. And beyond that, it's a character that Jason made. The movie is not really the character as we pictured him. It's whatever happened when the three of us connected.
And this was your film debut, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the first time I'd ever acted in my life.
Is that right?
Yeah,
ever acted at all?
Basically, yeah, was it? Yeah. No, yeah, it was.
Well, let me play a scene, and this is where your character Max Fisher confronts Herman Bloom, played by Bill Murray, about his relationship with their mutual love. And this is Rushmore teacher Rosemary Cross, played by Olivia Williams.
How was she, Herman?
Jesus Christ.
Was she good? I bet she was. Although I wouldn't know, because I never screwed her. Calling Skinny to be well, I took a nap. Are you comfortable, Max? I'll just be out back nude getting hand from the woman you love.
You never went skinny dipping.
Sure you didn't. And next you're going to tell me you didn't just walk out of her house at 2:00 in the morning.
I'm in love with her.
I was in love with her first. And, all that crap about... I don't think she's that great. I don't think she's right for you, Max. That was all bullshit, wasn't it? Do you think she's in love with you?
I don't know.
Well, I guarantee you she's not, and she never will be.
And that's a scene from Rushmore. What's that? Takes you back, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now, if he'd never acted before, why did you want him to play in this movie?
Well, I don't know, but about 30 seconds after I met him, I thought we can shut down the casting search. We found the guy. But it's funny hearing that scene. I don't see the movie at all. What I see is the night that we were shooting it, and it really. It's odd, and that's the first time I've ever listened to it without seeing the images.
Well, we do this to directors and actors from time to time, play clips, and it's always interesting to watch them listen to their work.
Yeah.
Are you
odd.
A visual person, would you say?
Yes.
You know.
I think so. Yeah, and it's strange to hear it. And it's also, I don't think I've seen that in so long.
Yeah, me neither.
And then to be sitting here with Jason live.
I had to look down and... Right.
Yeah.
And I didn't
realize
there was that much cursing.
Yeah.
And after that, did you think, I want to be an actor?
Yes. Well, look, I loved it, and I had a wonderful experience, but I also had, it came so out of the blue. I hadn't, had you asked me 3 months before we were shooting that movie, do you think you'll be in Houston, Texas, making a movie with Wes and Bill Murray, I would have said, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came home, it kind of felt, I just went back to high school, and I didn't know if it was something that I would be able to continue to do.
Well, let me play another clip from another film. We'll put you through this, Wes Anderson, and this is The Royal Tannenbaums, and this is a scene where Gene Hackman, who plays Royal Tannenbaum, is with his three children, played by Luke Wilson, Ben Stiller, and Gwyneth Paltrow. Let's listen.
I hear you're dying.
So they tell me.
I'm sorry.
Well, I've had a good run.
You don't look so sick, Dad.
Thank you.
What have you got?
I got a pretty bad case of cancer.
Ugh, how long are you gonna last?
Not long.
A month? A year?
About 6 weeks. Let me get to the point. The three of you and your mother are all I've got, and I love you more than anything.
Chaz, let me finish here.
I've got 6 weeks to set things right with you, and I aim to do it. Will you give me a chance?
No.
Do you speak for everyone?
I speak for myself.
Well, you've made your views known. I'll let somebody else do some of the talking now.
What do you propose to do?
I can't say, really. Make up for lost time, I suppose.
And that's a scene from The Royal Tenenbaums. I thought Gene Hackman was just fantastic in this movie. I mean, they all were good, but there was something, because we've seen him in so many other films, to see him in something like this.
Yeah, well, he, you know, it was written for him, and he's a powerhouse.
Yes, he is.
And he's great.
Was it hard
he's
to
a force of nature?
Yes.
Was it hard to convince him to do the film, or
it was very hard was to it? Convince him to do the film? Yeah, you know, I went to him a couple of years before we started to shoot the movie, and said, I've got this part I'm writing for you. I asked his agent to organize a meeting, which he was reluctant to do, but the agent made it happen, you know, made the meeting happen. And then Gene said that he did not want me to write a part for him. He didn't want a part, and he didn't like it when people tried to write for him, and he'd rather just skip the whole thing. And I said, really? Well, I am going to write this part for you. I'm going to come back. Well, I'm telling you now, I don't think it's a good idea.
Wow.
Then I gave him the script. No. Then I went back, please, no. And I spent, must have been a year, trying to press him into it. And then somehow, at the very last minute, I finally wrote him a letter. I threw everything at him and said, you're making a huge mistake, which of course he wasn't, because he could do whatever he wants.
Of course,
it doesn't matter. He's already accomplished so much. But he just finally broke down and said yes. And
was that unusual to have to be so persistent, so dogged, to get someone to be in one of your movies?
Well, you know, I've often written parts for people and they don't want to do it.
Right.
But usually, at a certain point, you just take no for an answer. In this case, I felt I couldn't, because I felt like he is the thing. The movie is going to sit on his shoulders, and he's the guy. And I really, really wanted him.
Is it too Freudian to say, looking at some of your films, to say that there's a theme about disappearing mothers, or divorced families, or dysfunctional families, or cold, you know, ungiving fathers?
Well, I would say there are definitely links among these movies like that. You know, then people say, well, what is your father like? Well, nothing. My father's like the father in Rushmore, Jason, you know, the barber. My father's not a barber, but that's the one father he actually kind of resembles. But there are, you know, I don't know where the stuff comes from. There are links among these movies, and sometimes there are things that are repeated among the movies, mm-hmm. there are similarities. But I sort of don't mind that. I feel like, you know, if these movies can kind of be a little body of work that follows a train of thought, then that's okay with me. I kind of like that.
And collection.
What's that?
La collection.
La collection.
And that's something you say when you're in Paris together?
I just was listening to that.
You say box set in French. I don't know how you say it.
Oh, the book set?
Yes.
The collection. Well, I'll tell you what, let's take another short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with director Wes Anderson and Jason Schwartzman. They've collaborated on a number of films, including a new one, and it's called The Darjeeling Limited. It's about three estranged brothers who meet on a train in India to reconnect, to search for a spiritual experience to deal with some of the baggage of their childhood. Wes Anderson's other films include Bottle Rocket, Rushmore, The Royal Tenenbaums, The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Jason Schwartzman's other films, including Rushmore, are I Heart Huckabee, Shop Girl, Bewitched, Slackers, and Marie Antoinette. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Any questions or comments, do give us a call. We'll be right back.
Mind Body Spirit Expo supports WHYY with Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, and Brian Weiss at Valley Forge Convention Center, October 26th to 28th. Details at mindbodyspiritexpo.com.
The National Constitution Center proudly supports WHYY. They're partners and style makers, confidants, and social activists. They're our nation's first ladies. And now, the National Constitution Center provides an up-close look at details, public and private, in a new exhibit. First Ladies, Political Role and Public Image at the National Constitution Center, October 5th through December 31st. Information is available online at www.constitutioncenter.org.
On October 25th, WHYY's The Next Mayor Project hosts a candidate forum. It's your chance to pose questions to the hopefuls, but we'd like you to do it in video form. Email your video or a clever computer-generated character asking about your most important issue. Be creative and make it personal. Then log on to the forum on October 25th as we put those questions to the candidates. For more details, visit whyy.org.
Planned Parenthood supports WHYY. For 90 years, Planned Parenthood has been dedicated to providing health information and services. Did you know Planned Parenthood's community educators help empower teens to make good choices by teaching responsible decision-making? Planned Parenthood. Our mission is prevention.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane, and we're talking with director Wes Anderson and actor Jason Schwartzman about some of the movies that they have worked on together and some of their films that they have done without each other. And we're also taking calls here at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get Carrie from Winmore, and then we'll play a clip from Huckabee's. Carrie, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I'm good. I love both of you guys. I've seen everything you've done, and actually, Jason, you're my imaginary boyfriend.
So. Oh.
Ooh, nice to talk to you.
Thank you, and good morning to you.
Thanks. Wes, I had a question for you. I'm a writer also, and I was wondering if you're more of like a laminated itinerary kind of writer, or do you just kind of write whenever and wherever the urge strikes?
Well, I'm not good at waking up every day at 7:30 in the morning and sitting at a desk. But once I have a project, then I usually work kind of obsessively. So I think I shift back and forth between laminated and unlaminated. but once it's really rolling, then that tends to be the only thing I want to do until we've got it done.
And do you take notes? I mean, do you have a little notebook where you might jot things down to help get your imagination started?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I write in a notebook like that big, but I also carry like a little notebook like this big. So then that's got a lot.
And you got little notes in there, just to keep your brain going, so to speak.
Yeah. And, Jason and Roman and I have traveled a lot together. So while we're traveling, Roman also keeps notes. We might figure out something for a scene, in the back of a car on the way to the airport or something like that. And we'll get it, set down to paper.
And you travel, you are traveling in a van as you go from city to city, right? You don't like to fly?
I don't mind that much, but we're going right now we're traveling around America, so we got a bus.
Right. And just makes, as opposed to a train, I mean, makes sense.
Well,
to do that.
Train, you don't have much flexibility.
No, you don't.
You got to be at the station at a certain hour. We can finish dinner.
But do not like to do not like to fly.
Well, sometimes I like it, I wouldn't say it's like at the top of my list of stuff to do.
I understand. Let me talk about I Heart Huckabees, a film you were in, different director, mm-hmm. Jason. How did you get involved in this project?
I got involved with David O. Russell, who wrote and directed the film. I met him, actually, and he asked me if I wanted to have a meeting, and I said, of course, and we ended up having a breakfast together, and he told me he was writing a movie with me in mind, if that's the right grammar.
Yeah.
And he wrote a script that we actually didn't end up making for a different film. But he said to me after that, when that one kind of fell through, he said, don't worry, I'm going to write something else, and I promise I'll have a part for you. And a year and a half later, he gave me I Heart Huckabees. And he said, here is a movie that I've scripted for you. So that's how it came about. And then we just set to work on it.
And you play a character named Albert Markovsky. Why did he write this for you, do you think?
Well, that's really probably more of a question for David.
Yes.
But I don't know why he wrote it for me. Maybe because he just thought I would be good in it. I don't know. that I would try hard to be good in it.
Well, let me play a scene... A scene from the film, and this is Schwartzman playing Albert Markovsky. He's talking with Lily Tomlin, who plays an existential detective, Vivian Jaffe, and Albert has hired her to explain an absurd coincidence in his life. Let's listen.
Have you ever transcended space and time?
Yes. No. Time, not space. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
I take it you don't make very much money, Mr. Markovsky.
Is that going to be a problem? I mean, are you expensive, what you do here?
We have a sliding scale. Some of our clients pay $30 a week. Some of our wealthy clients pay several thousand a week.
I can't believe you guys actually exist. I mean, how long have you been doing this?
17 years, 352 cases.
That's crazy. I'm going to have to ask you to please steer clear of my office because my work situation is a little shaky, all right?
You want us to stay away from your job?
Yeah, if you come snooping around my office, it can make me look unstable and it could hurt me.
I love that film, and I mean, it's so extraordinarily written.
Yeah, yeah. David's a great writer. It's a wild movie.
It is a wild movie. Was it fun though? I mean, just to play these people in existential detective.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it.
Reality.
I had a great time on the movie. It was it was a long, you know, long process from the time that I got involved with it, you know, all the way through shooting. It ended up being a long time, and I love David, and I loved working with him, and I really loved playing that part and getting to work with a lot of my favorite actors. I mean, Dustin Hoffman is one of the reasons why I try to do what
I
do.
Right?
Yeah, oh yeah. So to work with him was an extreme honor and a frightening experience.
And frightening too, just because. Because
I love him so much. Yeah, right. He's a big deal to me.
Have either of you, did you go to acting school or did you never do?
No.
Did you ever go to film school, Wes?
No, I didn't.
Does that seem like you should have, or does that make any difference to you?
Well, I wanted to, but it just didn't pan out. But I was about to when we started doing Bottle Rocket. I deferred, and then I just never quite.
The idea is I'll do it. I'll go to film school after.
I had put in a deposit.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Where were you going to go?
I was going to go to Columbia. And I held my slot there for several semesters, but then, you know, I think I had to just let it go.
Let me get John from Bryn Mawr to join us. Hi, John. Go ahead. Your Radio Times.
Yeah, hi there. I am actually a film student, speaking of film school, and Rushmore is, like, one of my top five of all time favorite movies.
Oh, good.
Thanks. I just wanted to find out, like, your movies have such, like, a distinct style and are so popular that, like, in film school, you see like movies that are derivative, and I was wondering, like, what's that like for you? Like, if you see movies that are sort of emulating your style, and is that strange to have that kind of level of popularity?
John, thanks for the call. You know what he's talking about, Wes Anderson.
Well, I get what he's saying. I think, you know, sometimes somebody will say that this seems like it's sort of influenced by you or something like that. Anything that is, I find it very flattering. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like the idea of people are watching these movies. That's because I know I'm influenced by so many filmmakers, and the idea of you being somebody who might, you know, inspire somebody, saying, well, that's what could be better than that.
Who influenced you? I mean, who are some of your filmmakers?
Well, in the case, there's so many, but in the case of this film, this new film, Darjeeling Limited, the key ones, I think, are there's three. There's Satyajit Ray, who is a huge inspiration for me just to make movies in the first place and then to go to India. Louis Malle, because of the documentaries that he made in India. He's also one of my favorite directors just in general. But his films in India were very exciting. We all, Jason and Roman and I, watched them together. And then Jean Renoir, his film The River. Was another big inspiration for all three of us with this film.
Having watched a number of your movies, I'm really struck by the camera work and the way you frame shots. There isn't a lot of like panning. It's almost like a series of photographs in a way. You don't like pan in, you know, there aren't there these sort of close ups that move in on someone. It's one series of shots after another.
Well, I mean, this one's got a lot of panning, I will say. But you know, I think maybe you're saying tableau quality,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, which I'm definitely drawn to. A lot of that stuff is just those decisions are just instinctive,
right? But there's a frame. I mean, pictures, the images are framed. It feels that way anyway.
Yes, often. Yeah, I like to, sometimes one thing I like to do is shoot through a window. I mean, I'm not, you know, lots of directors like to do it, but sometimes it's nice to have a frame within the frame,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially when you're working, as we were in this movie, with Panavision, which is anamorphic, a very wide shape. and sometimes you need to you want to kind of focus it to a certain part of the frame,
huh.
Or you have this wide rectangle to work with, so you want to strengthen the image. You want to use all the frame.
Jason, let me play another film that you were in. This is Shop Girl. Mm-hmm. Tell us how you got this part, and then we'll play a scene.
Yeah, well, I actually had read the book. Steve Martin wrote the novella, and I loved it. And I heard they were making a film out of it, and I read the script, and I just fought for it and petitioned. You know, you try to go for these things when you love them, and you hope that they will like you as much as you like them, and that, you know, the stars can all sync up and you can be a part of it. So I met with the director, Ann Tucker, and we got along, and we agreed to go to work together on it.
And tell us about Jeremy, the character.
And then I had to meet with Steve Martin.
Oh.
Which was...
Was that as nerve-wracking as meeting with
Justin
Hoffman?
Yeah, it actually is a funny story, because I was telling myself on the way to the meeting, don't compliment him, just talk about this piece and don't go in his past. And then I sat down, the first thing I said was, by the way, all your work means so much, man. And I went, like, I gushed for a while and I thought I had blown it, but I ended up being fortunate enough not to have.
Well, let's play another scene from a film. This is Jeremy, your character near the end of the film, and he's a transformed person. He's mature, more accomplished, and he's asking Mirabelle for a kiss.
I've been reading a lot of books on tape about getting into the moment, and I think this is the moment. And in the moment, this moment, I think we should kiss. And I've stood right here before, and I've been hurt. I've been rejected by you. And I'm going to ask you to kiss me again. And will you just kiss me?
I like your voice in that. It's really nice.
Well, thank you. That's because I was scared to do that. Because I actually do Claire Danes. She's a friend of mine, and it was like an awkward moment.
Oh, to romantically kiss a friend
yeah,
of yours?
Yeah.
Did you guys talk about that? Or,
no.
Or
just jump right in.
You just do it, yeah. You know, I'd like to play a scene from Life Aquatic. And as you said, you were told you can't do, you know, a movie in water. And I guess the answer is it's really hard to do that, right?
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard. But, you know, I think it's difficult, but there's no way to, you can't fake it. You just, I guess if you want to do one, you have to just go out to sea.
And are you a Jacques Cousteau fan, or were you?
Yes, a huge fan of Cousteau.
Well, this is a scene where oceanographer Steve Zissou is being interviewed by a reporter.
So what happened, in your opinion?
What are you talking about?
Well, don't you think the public perception of your work has significantly altered in the last 5 years?
That's your first question? I thought this was supposed to be a puff piece.
Should we come back to it?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it true that this is going to be your last voyage?
Wow. No comment. Who told you that? No, goddammit, I'm only 52. I'm always start out with some stock dialogue. You know, favorite color, blue, favorite food, sardines.
How do you feel about part one of your new film?
Why, how do you feel about part one of my new film?
Well, I'm honest, you know, so...
Just say it.
I thought aspects of it seemed slightly fake.
Well, I always appreciate when there's an interview in a movie, you know, just to see how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Bill Murray and Kate Blanchett.
Yes, Peace together.
Yeah.
And was that drawn from interviews you've seen, or just opinions that you have about being interviewed, or the process of interviewing?
Yeah, I think there are little bits of it from different specific interviews. And then, the other thing is quite a bit. There are things from other people in life. I mean, it's funny how much you know just hearing it like that. That was Jeff Goldblum's ex girlfriend who said that to him.
Oh, really?
Well, just one line. In it.
Oh, that's great.
Different things like that.
So you're just plundering things as you. Did you write plays and things as a kid? I mean, were you in theater?
Yes. But by the time I was in high school, I wasn't really doing it anymore. But when I was much younger, I wrote a lot of plays.
What were they about?
Just, you know, kind of the most basic things. One that was just about a bunch of guys with Maseratis, stolen Maseratis. One that was one about the Alamo. We
did because you grew up in Texas, right?
Yeah, we had a big Alamo play.
with guns and
good
guys, bad guys.
Davy Crockett swinging his rifle around. lots of different things. A number of Muppet adaptations.
Interesting.
We call Muppet Variations.
And we're almost out of time here. You're working on a new film, A Roald Dahl Story. Yes,
a Roald Dahl, an adaptation of Fantastic Mr. Fox, which Noah Baumbach and I wrote together, and where George Clooney plays Mr. Fox. We're starting production on that in England as we speak.
And we're almost out of time here, but Jason, we're going to close with one of the songs that you've written from a CD.
Oh yes, I
Coconut Records.
Coconut Records. It's my band, my new band.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks,
Mara,
for having
thank
us.
You so much.
You're welcome. And their new film is called The Darjeeling Limited, and we've been talking with Jason Schwartzman and Wes Anderson. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, your member-supported news and information station serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware.
For a second there, I thought you disappeared. It rains a lot this time of year. And we both go together if one falls down. I talk out loud like you're still around.